Welcome to the People of Packaging podcast, where we introduce people to the world of packaging and the people of packaging to the world. Here are your hosts, Adam Peek and Ted Tate.
All right, so we have another great episode of the People of Packaging podcast coming your way with Brandon Schwartz from Drinksmith. If you are watching the video, you can see Drinksmith has sort of revolutionized how we drink craft cocktails. They are doing some incredible virtual happy hour things where you can ship stuff around the U.S. to certain states. You'll learn about how they developed the product and how they use packaging and HPP processing and all sorts of stuff. So I hope you really enjoy it. As always, this season has been sponsored by Doxylent. We're so grateful to Doxylent for supporting us. If you need to level up your packaging specification management software, if you're wondering like how the heck did they manage all of these iterations to get to the Drinksmith packaging, head on over to peopleofpackaging.com. You support the podcast by downloading a free ebook and getting some incredible information about ways that you can level up your packaging game. So please support the podcast and do that. peopleofpackaging.com. Now here's Brandon Schwartz, the co-founder and head of marketing for Drinksmith. All right, so I am here with Brandon Schwartz on the People of Packaging podcast. I see you went to USC. Do you get sick of the Ohio State University? Because I do.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I like me being a Lakers fan. I mean, I've got allegiance to USC too. I guess I feel proud to have come from there. So yeah, the answer is yes.
Okay. It just drives me nuts whenever these players introduce themselves and they're like I'll tell people that I went to the Colorado State University. And just to, because, you know, nobody really cares about Colorado State, but I don't know. It just always drives me nuts when I hear the, like when the emphasis is on the, like, we are the best university in the state of Ohio. And I'm like, but you can't prove that. Anyway.
Yeah, it reminds me of that Key and Peele sketch. You know which one I'm talking about?
The draft one?
No, the one where it's just they go through. They have like five different versions of this with just like going through all of the different ways that players introduce themselves. It's pretty good. I'll send you a clip.
Oh man, I can't wait. Yeah, my son and I watched the draft one where they're all saying their names and it gets all the way to the end and it's like Dan Smith, BYU.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, that is, I think that is the one that I'm thinking about, the draft. I always thought it was more like they're like, you know, when you watch an NFL game and all the players go through and they say where they're from and then like some of them are, they'd like name their high school. And
yeah.
Like, what? Like, yeah. So.
Yeah. What's that?
How old is your kid?
So I have five children. I know. I have five kids. I live in Utah and I have enjoyed your Drinksmith alcoholic beverages as not an adherent to the dominant faith of the state of Utah.
Understood.
And so, yeah, so that's my 13-year-old. So my kids are 13, 11, 9, 7, and 5.
Wow. I've just got one. I can't even imagine having five. I've got one 1.5-year-old.
A 1.5, and they'll that half year, it starts to break off at about 8. I feel like they stop saying like I'm 7.5, and then it's like I'm 8, and then they're just 9. Like the half goes away soon.
For sure, yeah. No, I mean, you got it. If I can't say he's one, you know, because he's not. He's like five. He's progressed farther, way further from where he was when he was one. But
for sure,
now he just says no. That's all he knows. That's all he says. That's the only kind of conversation we have. Is he goes. No.
Yeah. Pro parenting tip. You can still go with months at that age. So you can still say, I have an 18-month-old.
Yeah, but I get confused and I end up saying like, yeah, this is my 15-month-year-old or my like my 12-year-old, and I just like I can't get it out of my
head. All right. Well, then we'll go with 1.5-year-old. This has been the most interesting introduction I think I've ever had on the show. So it's exciting, but I think the rest of the interview is going to be even better. So Brandon Schwartz is the founder of, or co-founder, president. What's your official title at Drinksmith?
Co-founder, president. Yeah.
All right. Cool. And I'm super excited to get into the packaging elements of your brand. And it's, as we kind of discussed right before the show, it's really cool as a packaging person to see a company really innovate and value packaging. And I can imagine there's going to be a lot of stories around that, but you've invented your own packaging basically. And I'm sure you didn't set out thinking we're going to have to invent our own packaging. Maybe you did. We can get into that a little bit more in detail. But I just think it's really cool. And I've got a few examples here. I'm sure you do as well, that we could show people. You guys are a tremendous follow on Instagram. I'm not a big Instagram person, but I love seeing all of your videos there. So kudos to you guys on that. So obviously from the USC comments and the Lakers comments, you are in the city of Angels, right? LA.
Yes, sir.
Is that where you grew up?
Sunny Santa Monica. Yep. Grew up here in LA. Little short stint in New York and then came back to LA.
Man, that's funny. My sister similarly grew up in Colorado, went to New York for a short stint, moved to LA. Yeah. And now she's actually here in Utah, which is a whole other fun story. Cool. So grew up in LA. And what was kind of just maybe give us a quick idea of your background.
Grew up in LA. You know, my dad, you know, always an entrepreneur. So I kind of just always had that entrepreneurial, like start a company, start a business, be independent type of vibe. I ended up at USC and I tried to get into like finance or real estate or, you know, entertainment, all these different areas, and then ended up just kind of being more attracted to the entrepreneurial side of it. So I graduated with a marketing degree and, you know, focus on entrepreneurial studies, doing a lot of like feasibility analysis and, you know, trying to even launch stuff while in college. And I didn't really have any great ideas back then. And then, after college, I got involved with a CPG startup in the beauty business. That's where a lot of my background is. And that company was just like a super viral product. You know, it was a hair care product. I was bald back then. So, you know, there was no irony lost, you know, when I was about it. But yeah, I went from, you know, $10,000 a month to $6 million a month within the first 6 months of me being there. So that kind of like really, you know, like accelerated my entrepreneurialism.
Yeah. And that's good. 10,000 to 6 million is, I mean, maybe I don't know a lot about business, but
number, I don't know.
Yeah. I think that would be good. And for those of you who are not able to watch the interview, Brandon and I are both bald and proud of that situation.
You wear it well, my friend.
Thanks. You as well. Although I got it, my beard's getting a little scraggly, so I gotta trim that up.
To have that kind of ability right there, so you just have more testosterone flowing through your blood.
I'm pretty sure it's not that. I don't know what it is. Right on. And what was the? I do have a question because I want to get back to this hair care company, but what, when you were in college, you mentioned real briefly that you had a bunch of ideas fail. What was the one idea that you're like, that was actually still a pretty good idea that you tried?
Oh my God. I mean, I don't know if I can really say that, to be honest. Like the one idea that I was really like dogged about that I can't even believe that I like even tried to really do feasibility on was this like vegan fast food restaurant where like you could drive through and you could get like any and all of these like vegan you know, like happy meals and such. But yeah, no, it was like I didn't know anything about running a restaurant, and like my feasibility test showed that I shouldn't do this.
You never started it though?
I never started it.
Okay,
no.
Good. I was like, wow, that was
No, yeah, no, it was terrible. I didn't have any great ideas when I was in college, honestly. And at that time, everyone was doing like apps and tech. And I always felt, you know, like I should go places where people are not really competing and like try and get into areas where like no one's really. And I feel like a lot of people are doing that now. You know, you got all these like millennializing of these super commodity items. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that no one was ever thinking like, oh, let's make a really ergonomic nail clipper, you know, and it's like, bam, it's a $50 million company, you know? So I didn't, back then I was like, everyone was making apps and I was like, oh, I'll do fast food, you know? And I didn't know what I was doing. Now I still don't know what I'm doing, but I'm a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I was in middle school and I had this project that I had to do. I'll never forget this moment. So I took these soda cans and I cut them up, the aluminum, and I took tape and I made like finger snowboards. Oh, and yeah. I sold these things around my school to people for, you know, whatever. And I made hardly any money because I was just making them by hand. And we would like snowboard. Yeah. Then I grow up and I see it's like a whole thing. And I was so pissed. I was like, dude, this was like a $1 billion idea. Oh, yeah. That I thought of just cutting up soda cans. So maybe sometimes to really young kids, I'm encouraging my kids as well. I'm like, start early, you know, try to start businesses.
Like Newton and the other guy who started calculus, you know, different sides of the earth. You know, you thought of it independently. So I think it still counts.
It kind of does. I think that what's that company? Tech Decks?
Yeah, man. That got me through middle school.
Yeah. So you're welcome is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you.
Yeah. Yeah. Me and circa 1993, 94, I was already cutting up soda cans. So I need some royalties from Tech Decks is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Anybody can go after them.
Yeah. Yeah. So the hair care company. So you joined them as a marketing and then moved into ownership, or how did that whole thing work?
No, actually I didn't end up owning the company.
Okay.
My friend's brother started it. You know, I got out of USC. I had done a bunch of, you know, internships that I realized, you know, were in industries I never wanted to get into. And, you know, just was kind of lucky enough to talk to my friend who said, hey, look, my brother, you know, has this company that, is kind of starting to take off. It's got some legs and they need like a full-time person to be there to help them run it. And, you know, at that time there was really no one there. It was just like a phone that would get answered sometimes by someone from another business that was inside of, you know, he had another business that was inside and we used their empty space for this hair care company. The company is called Brazilian Blowout.
And, oh yeah.
Yeah. It became huge. And, I was the first person there in the office. And really the business model was just like, hey, let's turn the phones on. And, you know, that's how it all kind of started. And, you know, I was taking inbound phone calls, making outbound phone calls, getting people's credit card numbers and running them, you know, going into the warehouse and packaging things up and shipping them, you know, even delivering them myself sometimes. And then it quickly accelerated the product. You know, the product was like a really big deal for people who struggle with frizzy hair. And what it did was it basically glued on a layer of protein that made the hair more structurally integral, I guess is the best way to put it. And the hair would bend less. That's the root problem with frizz. And you get this like frizz-free smooth hair that would last for 3 months. And you really could just walk out of the shower and it looked beautiful.
Wow.
So yeah, it blew up and I went from like customer service and like kind of like the inbound, you know, shipping to, you know, launching distributors and really managing distributors and, you know, doing that whole thing. And the company just kind of blew up under my feet. I was just lucky enough to be there and get
cool,
you know, bird's eye view in a lot of different parts of the business.
And then is that what sort of encouraged you to, cause you started your, it looks like you started, is it Unwash? Is that what the name of the company was?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It is. Well, I left the beauty business and I thought I should get into tech, you know, tech seems cool.
Yeah. It's what everyone's doing.
Yeah. And then I realized again, like, oh yeah, no, like I can't compete in this area. There's just like way too many, like, even if you do have a great idea and concept and you do even execute it, it's still difficult. So I ended up getting back in the beauty business and started my own hair care company. I was still bald back then. And, you know, I, myself and funny enough, another bald partner, we started this hair care company with the idea of, making alternative to soap cleansing products for the hair. So that was like the main core tenet of the product line. And, yeah, we ended up getting into some pretty cool retailers and we sold it twice actually, which is pretty crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. And so you can kind of build, I mean, it's the reason why I think that's important is, like you've been able to, I'm sure, really build upon each foundation. You know, one is seeing rapid rise and growth. And then what is it like to take something from ideation to, you know, a funding event where you sell a business. Those are two experiences I don't think a lot of people can say that they have. And so, you know, to be able to then take that and launch where you're at right now, which is at Drinksmith, is just the two of you and Lawrence?
Oh, no, at this point we have like 12 full-time employees.
Okay. Did you guys co-found it or did you have other?
Yeah, we co-founded it together.
Real quick, how did you and Lawrence meet?
We met each other in college. Both USC graduates. He ended up staying at SC for a few years in the law school and got his law degree. And I ended up, you know, doing some entrepreneurial stuff while he was there. And then we kind of combined forces after he graduated.
Cool. And 12 employees is, again, that's not a, you know, I think everyone has these, like, at least entrepreneurs tend to sometimes have these like big grandiose ideas, but it's like getting to like where you have 12 people where like you are responsible is not, that's not an easy task. From where you came from to where you're at today, it has got to feel good, but also knowing like you got to be looking at that runway going like, yeah, but this is just the very beginning of where this thing's headed. Right.
Totally. Yeah. And I'm like, I mean, every day I'm like, oh my God, I hope everyone's excited to be here. Like, I think some people are like, oh, I have employees. I need to like crack the whip. I think more so like myself and Lawrence are like, thank you for being here. We need the help. Like, please don't leave.
Yeah.
But I think they're all excited about it. And they all see the same vision that we do. Like, you know, craft cocktails for everyone, you know, at home. It's cool, you know, for this category, nothing like this has ever been done before. So, you know, everyone's really excited about it and sees.
Yeah. Yeah. This is your realization of the principle inside of you. That's like the blue ocean. Like, I'm going to go out and start a vegan fast food restaurant, but instead you've probably discovered something a lot better.
Yeah. 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 No, this one's probably, I don't know, the vegan fast food thing probably would have been pretty difficult to do. So I would say this one's easier, but still not without its challenges.
Yeah. So let's get into it. So I've got one of your products. Hang on.
It's right back here. I know. I saw that over your shoulder and I'm going to put it up.
Yeah. So
honored to be there.
Oh man, it's so cool. Because it embodies, for me at least, it embodies so much of the cool stuff about packaging. Like you said, you know, everyone's getting into tech and everyone gets into these, like, you know, these whatever industry, these like new sexy industries. And I'm like, where are all the young people in packaging? That's part of the reason I started the podcast with Ted almost 3 years ago, is we were like, we need to go meet people where they're at and tell cool stories and talk about rad stuff. Because packaging is a really incredible, it's a $1 trillion industry. And at the time there was not a single podcast and it just seems so like mundane to people, but I'm like, there's cool stuff happening across this industry.
Sure. I mean, there's a million trade shows you can go to and just get your head blown, you know, by just like seeing what people are up to in their little nooks and crannies of the world. You know?
Yeah. I went to a trade show once. It's called I'm going to get it wrong. It's huge though. It's the International Poultry Processing Expo, the IPPE. So it's a trade show for people who want to process poultry meat. And it's huge. And that's one.
Yeah, there's another one. I go to Italy. Well, not anymore, but I used to go to Italy for Cosmoprof, you know, mm-hmm. I was really kind of in the beauty business. And that was like, they had like, you know, take a typical convention with like, you know, in like a stadium or something like that, 40x the size of that. And then they do two huge trade shows a year. One is for beauty and the other one is for pottery.
Ceramics. Wow.
And it's like, it's nuts. I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a million people out there who are just, you know, trying to figure out how to make cool stuff. So I like it. I like to be able to have something in my hand I can hold and say like, hey, here it is. Instead of like, oh, here's a website and here's an app and the code is somewhere. I don't even know where it is.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. So we've got this, and there's you guys, like I said, do a great job on Instagram kind of showing, you know, what to do, you know, that this bottom is, you know, it's twistable. And it holds some, this is HPP process. Is that correct? It's a cold pressed juice.
Correct.
And then the alcohol is filled up here. And then there's some sort of wizardry around which this is all put together.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, it's super cool. It labels applied. So, you've been at this for what, over 5 years?
Yeah. 5 years.
How long did this thing, this bottle take to develop, and how many iterations do you think you went through?
Oh man. I mean, 15 or so different iterations on it. I mean, pretty much at the end of each one though, we were like, yes, this is the one. You know, even the first one, we were like, this is going to work. And then it was like, we put it through high pressure processing and it was like, hey guys, it didn't work. And we're like, oh my God. You know, so there was definitely like a lot of trial and tribulation around it. I can talk more about it if you want.
Yeah, no, I mean, for sure. Let's dig into it. Cause that's kind of, I mean, that's what anybody who's listening to a podcast about packaging, is probably like, oh, that's a pretty cool story about your healthcare company. And yeah, he's from LA, but let's talk about this crazy two-part HPP combined with alcohol twisted on bottle. Like, so did this take you guys, how many years do you think it took just to come up with at least where you're at today? Cause I'm guessing even today you're like, yeah, there's still some things that we want to keep working on.
Yeah, for sure. We have a bigger size that we're coming out with, but yeah, the initial, so me and my business partner, Lawrence, we were looking at areas that we could, you know, exploit some white space in. And we saw that the ready to drink cocktail arena was sort of lacking innovation. The alcohol industry in general, sort of lacking innovation around that time. You know, companies would put like a spice in their rum and be like, look how innovative. And you'd be like, yeah, I don't know. Especially coming from the beauty business where it's like, you do have like this crazy focus on packaging and unique positioning and functionality and then, you know, all the marketing and stuff after that, you know, it was interesting to kind of have all of that in my backpack, in my back pocket, you know, to bring to the table. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, Lawrence and myself, we kind of, you know, we're big cocktail aficionados, knew a lot of the bars and bartenders. And we knew like, hey, it's really difficult to actually like make what this person can do behind the bar at home. You know, you got to have all these ingredients and you got to know what you're doing. And even though like I love craft cocktails, I'm not really great at making them. I mean, at this point, I probably make a good, you know, drink or two for you. But bottom line is like the average person is not really going to invest in the understanding, learning, you know, acquiring all the stuff to be able to just like, at moment's notice, like, hey, let me make a cocktail for you.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And that's honestly the person who does do that, more power to you. Like, we're not trying to like replace that. Please make drinks. It's awesome. But we were like, well, how should we do this? And honestly, the idea for the bottle kind of came out like right away. Cause you know, I was in the beauty business and I kind of realized, you know, the impact that packaging has on, you know, we're in the business of fashion, really, you know, mm-hmm. Got to look cool. It's got to be eye catching. And, you know, with marketing too, it's got to be visual and you need to have all of these things, you know, in your product that can signal to people what the benefits are. So, you know, separating the ingredients we knew was important. Like, hey, do you think that like a mixed drink is going to taste good sitting, you know, all together pre-mixed for, you know, a couple months? No, it's not. So
yeah,
separation was important, you know, just kind of intuitively. So that in really like the first couple of conversations, we were like, yeah, we need to have a dual chamber bottle. And then, you know, we, our you know, our core question was like, hey, what is the reason, you know, in general, why people can't have great tasting drinks in a bottle? And it was like, well, because they're not using fresh ingredients. Like you, what you get at the bar at a great craft cocktail bar is using fresh ingredients. And, you know, the difference between that and what's in a typical can or bottle is, you know, they're using preservatives. They're heat pasteurizing the product. They're using artificial ingredients. So of course it's not going to taste like what you get at the bar. So, you know, we knew we had to use fresh ingredients. We knew we wanted to keep the fresh ingredients, like maximizing the taste, the color, the texture, you know, the aroma of it. So that required it being separate. But then the bigger, a lot of people really like that twist component too, you know, keeps it separate, you twist it, it's engaging, makes you kind of like a bartender yourself. But, you know, the bigger innovation really was, okay, how do we put this through high pressure processing? And it was difficult, you know, to find the right type of, you know, manufacturer that could help us do this, you know,
right.
And a lot of people in the alcohol industry, when they go after trying to make a ready to drink cocktail, they're kind of coming at it from like a distillery standpoint. They're like, how do we make this in our distillery? And it's like, well, you're not really going to be able to do a fresh product in the typical distillery setup. So we ended up acquiring the licensing to manufacture and handle alcohol at our juice co-packing facility. And not only do they fill, but they do this high pressure processing. So we needed to figure out, okay, cool. Like what's the mechanism that we use to separate and mix the product? And this iteration that you have in your hands, it has a plug that basically threads up a neck on the inside of the bottle. So as you twist it, there's this moving cap that threads up and it creates this opening for the two liquids to mix. We tried different mechanisms too before that, like, you know, like a grate, and you would twist and then it would pull up a grate and then it would mix this way, you know, and I'm doing horizontally now.
Sure.
You know, and it, you know, ultimately this plug was the simplest way to, you know, to make the product work under the high pressure processing. And then a lot of different kind of tinkering around with different thicknesses and rigidity and, you know, different resins, you know, so that way it could go through that 85,000 pounds per square inch of high
pressure. Right. It's no joke.
No joke. Yeah. I mean, those machines are millions of dollars, you know, they're as big as like an apartment, you know, and basically the bottles go into these, I want to say they're tanks, but they're not really tanks. They look like canoes or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, they're like these big tubes that you just stuff the bottles into. You can't stuff another bottle into the tube. And then they shut the tube. They have like this, maybe canoe is not a good, it's like a submarine or something. And then they shut it. And then there's these ports for water that they just pump water into the tube with all the bottles. And this water is pumped in at 85,000 pounds per square inch. And the pressure, it basically, with the way that we made the bottle, it flexes, the plastic flexes without breaking. And then the pressure kind of transfers through the plastic and it inactivates the microbes that are on the inside of the juice. So you get, you know, you get about 5 months before the microbes basically explodes the microbes. And then the microbes, you know, over time, they can put themselves back together, so to speak, and then proliferate and then spoil the juice. So right now we get 5 months, and we're doing a new shelf life study that'll probably show it's closer to 7 months of refrigerated shelf life, and the drinks stay fresh. Don't have to use artificial ingredients, no preservatives. The taste, the sensorial nature of the juice is preserved, you know, without having to use all that nasty stuff that makes the stuff taste different.
Dude, that's so awesome. And I love your description. it's the HPP process is fascinating to watch. Yeah. And, you know, fortunately I've been able to work with pressed juice companies and, fresh, ready to eat meal companies that use HPP. Right. And it's such an innovative technology, but I think the cool part about it, and I won't get too hung up on this topic, but connecting, fresh ingredients, so a quality product with a long shelf life has such an advantage when it comes to, curbing food loss. So HPP has done incredible work. Because so much food gets thrown out. It's like 40% of all of our food and beverages that are manufactured end up getting tossed. And so when you can extend out the shelf life, you give so much more ability for somebody to enjoy it fresh instead of, I mean, imagine if you had to pack this thing out and you had 2 weeks to sell it. Like,
it'd be impossible.
You would have no business model. You'd have a vegan fast food restaurant. Is what you'd have.
That would be difficult too. So
it'd be super difficult. So I'll drop the vegan fast food restaurant, but I'm still fascinated by it. So
no,
so it's cool that, and is it only the bottom part that goes through HPP?
Yeah. Basically what happens is the bottles, so it's patented. We're in the patent pending. We're 28 out of 29 of the claims have been favorably approved at this point. So we're pretty confident we're going to win the patent overall. But the bottle comes in pieces from our manufacturer. So the bottom gets, we draw in all the fruit same day or night before from farms around LA. And then we fill it. We batch it first. So there's different mixes for the different drinks, different kinds of ingredients that we're mixing with the fresh stuff. So we will batch it, and then on a typical day we'll do six or seven different recipes. I'm sure you can imagine what it looks like in mm-hmm. the back facility. It's like huge tanks and just like we're pouring and mixing with huge mixing implements. And
this is a contract manufacturer, right? That you it's a partner of yours.
Yeah, they're in Long Beach. They're called CalPak. They're a pretty well-known juice co-packer.
Awesome.
Our license though to handle all the liquor for their on their location. And yeah, we fill the bottom we have a torquing machine that torques down the moving cap on top of the bottom chamber. And then they get trucked down to CalPak's sister facility. It's called High Pressure Processing Food Systems. That's right in like Wilmington. And they put all the bottles into the high pressure processing. And a few days later, it comes back to CalPak where the rest of the bottle gets assembled and filled with the liquor. So the small chamber comes back. We have a pneumatic press that we take the top chamber. It's like a sleeve almost, and it gets pressed down onto the bottom. Mm. And then it goes onto the filling line, injected with the liquor, and then capped and then stored at 51 degrees.
Yeah, that's crazy. And how much of this equipment did you guys have to custom build?
Yeah, their filling line is theirs.
Right.
We had to bring in, and obviously the high pressure processing, we would have not invested into that. It's
sure
dollars and you got to have licensing and all that kind of stuff. But we have a pneumatic press that helps to assemble and push down the bottle. Mm-hmm. I'll pay you $1,000 if you can break that bottle. Honestly, that thing is.
I tried. I was telling you before the call, I was on with a bunch of people from the IOPP who are all packaging engineers, and they were literally like, take that thing apart. And so I was like, I ripped off the label. So I've got this. I had the bourbon sour. So I had this label sitting here. I don't know what happened to the empty bottle. I was like, guys, I can't get this thing apart.
Oh yeah, it's impossible. You can't break it. It's
like, no. I'm like, I don't know what this is sealed with, but it's like Fort Knox trying to get into this thing.
I've had like bodybuilders that I've been like, hey, just try to challenge them to break it, just because I thought it would be a cool video. But they're impossible to break at this point. Wait, what was it that we were just talking
about? Well, I was just asking about because it seems like there's like the filling, right? That would be standard. The customized, I was thinking, was that kind of torquing.
Oh yeah, the machines.
Yeah.
And then we have the pneumatic press. So that's one thing. We get that from Kinex. They make some good machinery. And then we have this chuck capper basically with a custom head that basically will come down and torque, because you just can't torque it by hand. Like you can't push it down fat hard enough. So
yeah.
So we have a couple of machines. They're modular, so they just go onto the filling line, and they don't end up using them for any other clients
because
they just don't make sense.
Yeah, yeah. It's the only. There's plenty of 16-ounce Boston rounds out there that are getting filled, but this is the only of this thing that I've seen. A couple questions, and then we'll actually be at the end, which is crazy. So it's gone quick. So I love the mixology inspired by.
Yeah.
So are these the, like in this one, it's Charity K Johnston. So you give her, you know, you shout her out on, I'm guessing it's her Instagram handle. Yep. Are these the local bartenders that you went and talked to?
Yep. So we have, at this stage, we've got like 15 or almost 20 different people that all have their own drinks, you know, attached to their name, their likeness. They end up making content for us. We end up advertising from their accounts. They get a piece of every sale, you know, especially now with the pandemic and everything, a lot of bartenders are out of work. So
I know.
Killer way for them to kind of, you know, extend their brands too. So yeah, every drink has a bartender. We're stoked about that.
That's awesome. I love, I think that I'm a big fan of the human connection that packaging can make. So there's already a human connection because you're requiring me to participate in the manufacturing of your product. So
yeah.
I feel like I'm doing this, like we're doing this together, me and you, me and Charity, we made a drink together, right?
Yeah.
So that's cool. But it's also awesome that you guys are, you know, giving back to the bartending community. Like you said, especially now, I'm guessing 5 years ago, if you predicted 5 years ago that we would have COVID-19 in 2020, yeah. Then I need to ask you about some stock advice.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
Obviously you didn't set out to be like a secondary income for bartenders. I'm sure that sort of has come.
That was actually like, you know, before we, I mean, obviously didn't understand quite the impact that would have for some of them, especially, you know, not being able to work behind the bar during the pandemic. So, but right. Yeah, we weren't like great drink makers. So like we needed to consult different bartenders to understand how to make the products. And then it was like, kind of feels natural just to say that we did it with them because we did. They all originated the recipes. So it was like, put you on the bottle. Like, that's awesome. It just felt natural.
Yeah.
Together like that.
That's awesome. Okay. So two more questions and we'll wrap it up. Did you, when you were developing the bottle, did you guys use any kind of like packaging engineer to consult with, or were you relying upon the manufacturers of the bottle? Cause there's a ton of engineering that goes into this bottle. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. So at what point in time were you engaging? We have a lot of packaging engineers who listen to that. And by the way, how many states are you guys in now?
32 states.
So, go to their website. I'll make sure to tag it in the podcast, but if you can order this in your state, you should definitely do it. Especially if you're a packaging engineer, cause this will become your favorite. Not only does it taste amazing, but it's an engineering. I mean, it's so cool. So at what point did you have to start really relying heavily, not only on bartenders for the drinks, but then also packaging engineers to help you develop this?
Yeah. Well, luckily, you know, with a previous beauty experience, I had made some custom packaging there. And so I already was really tight with an engineer.
Awesome.
He's a partner in the company. So super committed. And we had a manufacturer that we were really close with as well. So, you know, he was involved from the very beginning.
That's awesome.
Hey, we want to make this dual chambered bottle. It's going to have to go through high pressure processing and go. And so he started.
That you're going to have a whole lot of packaging engineers clapping right now because there's a sense, and I'm sure that your business partner has gone through this before. There's a feeling with packaging engineers that they're always kind of brought in at the last minute. You know what I mean? Where it's like all of a sudden somebody goes, oh guys, we got to get this thing made. So, you know, marketing and branding and everyone's thinking about it. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we didn't get our packaging engineer involved. And they're all sort of just tossed in at the last second. And it's awesome that you guys are like, no, we're bringing you in as a business partner. You know, we're fully aware. The democratization of responsibility in your companies, I'm sure something that has really led to a lot of your success, right? Because you just are like, you're an engineer. And if you can help us out, then you can participate in the gain of the company.
Yeah. And he's the coolest guy. I mean, I think he's a genius. I don't know if he would call himself one, but the guy just like has a ton of experience. His name's Cliff. I mean, Yeah, that's a mistake. If you are focused too much on your, if you're trying to make like a legit product and, you know, packaging is like the core tenet of it, that needs to be there to power the whole thing. And you focus more on pretty pictures and fonts and colors. Yeah, you're not going to have a good time.
No.
Like the brand and the marketing and all that stuff is 100% secondary to like the product itself. We're like, hey, the idea is like, hey, we want to make the best product possible. So yeah, you know, the engineering, if you're really serious about making a great product and you know that you have to engineer something, you definitely need to have that person be a part of the conversation. Because it's insane how even the smallest changes, the implications that they have. I mean, you'd think like, oh yeah, like we went to the moon and whatever, you know, 19 whatever. And sorry, I should know.
Like, I think it's 1960 something. Yeah. I feel like it's like Jim Carrey and Dumb and Dumber. Like, we landed on the moon.
Yeah. Woo! Yeah, you know, you think it'd be, oh yeah, it's so easy. Just, you know, you slap a little bit of this and you slap a little bit of that and bam, you got yourself a package. No, it's like, like you change one thing on that and it has far reaching implications. So it's like, you need to have the engineering, especially at the beginning. It's just like, just to go back to that analogy, you go with the moon landing and everything with what's the thing with the rocket, you know, if you're 2 inches off.
Oh yeah.
You know, at the beginning with your trajectory, you know, and that's the difference between ending up like in this part of space versus that part of space.
Right.
That's how it is that's how it was with this. And that's how it is with, I think, a lot of packaging. So you gotta really respect and honor that.
Yeah, no doubt. Brandon, this has been incredible. The time has certainly flown by for me. So I hope it has for you. What are some ways, like what's the future look like? Like, what's your next big idea for Drinksmith? And then how can people engage with your brand? I've already mentioned Instagram. So what are some other ways? So kind of you mentioned a bigger bottle, you know, something like that. So where are you guys going and how can people connect and follow that?
Definitely follow us on Instagram, or check out our website. You know, I would encourage you to try and purchase the product if you're listening to this. But yeah, biggest plans, you know, for us are, you know, right now a lot of this is happening online, so we want to get into stores and launch internationally, because we think that the technology and approach to making cocktails is good for, you know, everywhere. So we're excited about that. And then this summer we're launching a 750 ml bottle. It's huge, and you know, definitely some concerns around how easily it will be able to be twisted. But bottom line is we're launching that sucker. 750 ml. It's like you know, 4 times the amount of liquid inside of it. It's got a whole different. It's got the same technology on the twist, but a little different aesthetic. So yeah, I'll send you a picture of it.
That's awesome, man. That's so cool. Well, I'll make sure to put in the show notes your website, your Instagram, you know, shout out to Cliff, the packaging engineer. Sounds like we got to get him on at some point in time too.
Yeah.
I'm sure he could wax poetic on some stuff. So, super cool, Brandon. Thank you so much for being on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Nice to meet you. I feel flattered to have, I feel lucky. I'm happy. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode of the People of Packaging podcast. Remember, you can support our podcast by going to peopleofpackaging.com and getting your free ebook from Doxylent. Please also remember to support Drinksmith by going to drnxmyth.com. You can also find them on Instagram. They have great products, they're great people, and they're doing some incredible things in the industry. So be sure to support a local business that's doing some awesome things. Until next week, thanks.